It's the most wonderful time of the year.
That's chili harvest time in southern New Mexico. The sound of chili roasting. Evokes the smell filling the air. And today, we have the Red or Green Confidential. We're joined by NMSU Professor Emeritus Dr. Paul Boslin and Juan Morales from the Santa Fe Grill. Edmundo Resendez is here today for the Red or Green Confidential, and we'll get started right after NPR News on KRWG Public Media. 575-646-2212 for your questions and comments on the Red or Green Confidential.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Yes, it is chili harvest season in southern New Mexico, and you are tuned in to the Red or Green Confidential from KRWG Public Media. The telephone number you'll want to have handy, 575-646-2212. And you can follow along on Facebook. We're streaming live on Facebook, and so you will see that we are joined today by Edmundo Resendez. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Casey. This, by the way, is the sixth annual Red or Green Confidential.
Oh, all right. So for
6 years.
For 6 years now, you've been able to tune in, hear about this year's crops, and get new recipes, and maybe hone some of your older recipes with the help of Juan Morales from the Santa Fe Grill. Good afternoon, Juan.
Hello, Casey, Edmundo, Dr. Bosman. How are you all doing tonight?
We're
doing great.
It's
chili season.
It is.
It's chili season. Wonderful time of the year.
It is 1 p.m., so it's still afternoon. But I know you've been working 24 hours around the clock, Juan, and we'll get back to that throughout the course of this hour. And NMSU Professor Emeritus Dr. Paul Boslin, welcome back to KRWG Public Media.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Why don't we start with you, Dr. Boslin, and just give us an idea of how you think this year's chili crops are shaking out around southern New Mexico.
Okay. We started off a little cool in spring. We were a little worried about the crop, and then it got kind of hot. But these rains came and really helped a lot of the fields. They're looking beautiful. Unfortunately, some people got a little too much rain, and that's an issue. But basically, it's going to be a really good season. We're just coming into the good time to be buying your green chili, putting it away, and most flavorful right around now. So I'd say in the next 3 weeks is probably a good time to get green chili.
You say it's most flavorful right around now. Why is that?
Oh, because, you know, when you think about a chili plant flowers, then it sets a little fruit and it keeps growing. And then at one point, it kind of stops growing, and then it puts kind of flavor into the pod and that fruit. And then that's the best time to pick it. And if you're an old timer around here, you kind of learn that feel, that firm green chili you want to pull off the plant. You don't want the soft ones. They haven't really matured. So we call them green matures, and they're the best.
All right, Edmundo?
Well, you know, Dr. Boslin, we were discussing this year's chili crop, and you brought up the rainy season and how we received a lot of rain. Were there a lot of fields that were affected and really going to have an impact on the production of chili in southern New Mexico?
I don't think it'll have a significant impact. It will have an impact. You know, we at the university try to educate farmers about what we call laser leveling. You make the little pitch on the soil. So if you do get that rain, it'll drain off. Dig a ditch at a hole in the back to drain it off. So hopefully if they didn't get too much, but of course some of these storms dump so much water, unfortunately those farmers will probably lose the field to Phytophthora chili wilt, we call it. But the other fields I've seen, boy, they just look wonderful. The chilies seem happy. Sometimes the rain will wash away salt out of the soil. So the roots of the plant are a little happier. Also wash off insects, bugs, and things like dust, and it helps the plant. So what I've seen right now in the fields that are dry and you can get into, really beautiful, really beautiful.
Dr. Boslin, let me ask you a question, and you're probably not an expert on this, but just to bring it out there. A lot of farmers, and, you know, this is going across the you know, it's happening across the country, shortage of workers. And NMDA announced the other day that they were going to supplement some of that income to bring in workers. Have you heard from farmers that are having trouble bringing in workers?
You know, I haven't talked to farmers directly at the beginning of this harvest season, so I really can't even fake this one. I don't know the situation, but I just know that the fields seem to be getting picked, so hopefully it's helping.
That's indeed. Good. You know, this problem, you know, of a worker shortage, obviously impacted more so by the pandemic, but was something that existed even before the pandemic. So, you know, farmers are facing a lot of long term challenges, including labor shortages and also the challenges they face with finding water in the future. What types of ways, Paul, do you see farmers getting more creative and using science more to have healthy chili crops every year in the face of water shortages?
Sure. Traditionally, we water the chili with what's called fallow or furrow irrigation. We kind of flood the furrows, let it sub up. But one of the best things a grower can do is switch to what we call drip irrigation. You put a little plastic line under the chili plants, and it drips the water out. So you don't use as much water. And it also keeps this kind of flushing salt away from the roots. So the plants grow better, you get less disease. And in the studies we've done at the university, it showed a 10% yield increase using drip over the furrow irrigation. And because you're using less water, what this year the farmers are having to pump water. They didn't get enough of the EBID or the Elephant Butte Irrigation District water. They got one irrigation and it was shut off, so they have to pump water. So the less you have to run that electric pump or gasoline, diesel pump, the more savings you will have on that crop. So it really does benefit a lot of ways.
Let's move over to Juan now. Juan, I'd like for you to jump in with some of the types of chilies that you look for and that you suggest maybe that others should be looking for this year.
Well, my favorite chili is the Sandia Salé, Casey. You know why? Because it has a great bite to it. It's meaty, it's healthy, and it has that awesome bite. You know, if you like it hot, that's what I recommend. You know, the Big Jim's also really, really good chili. And meaty, beefy, big. That's great for chile con queso, enchilada casseroles also. But like I said, you know, the Sandia Salé, that's what I prefer myself.
Well, we
and
have...
that's what we stuff. Go ahead.
Please finish your sentence.
No, and that's what I recommend for, you know, our listeners out there. Sandia Salé is my personal favorite, and it is fantastic.
Well, we did have some listeners chime in on Facebook before we began the show today. And so we'll talk a little bit about what some of the folks are saying and questions they're asking and tips they're sharing. In fact, Becky asked, said she'd love a recipe for red enchilada sauce. That is so amazing. So Sal chimed in on Facebook and said he boils the red chili until it is super soft, where you pick it up and it falls apart. I boil a quarter of an onion and four small garlics, add a couple of dashes of salt, comino, bay leaves. Once it has cooked, I blend it until it's smooth with just enough water because I like my red chili thick and I don't add flour. I make red enchiladas or chile colorado. Sometimes I'll add chili guajillo, chipotle, and pasillo. Today, I didn't add the extra chili. My red enchiladas for dinner tonight, added a picture. Almost done. How nice. And I must say, there's a few things in there that I had not heard of, the guajillo and pasillo. Can you tell us more about that combination?
Pasilla. It's a pasilla chili. It's another red pepper, and that's what they use in, like, for a carne adobada recipe. I've used them carne adobada, and, you know, there's a famous Mexican entree. It's called birria. It's called birria. It's made out of beef or lamb or goat, and they use the guajillo. They use the red chili, the garlic, the comino and bay leaf for the sauce, and they braise it. Back in the olden days, they used to cook them in pits, in fire pits. And but nowadays, you know, they braise it. You know, they make it indoors, or you could even boil it. You know, it comes out really good. You make that nice savory sauce. It's like an ajou. It's like an ajou, basically. You make a taco, you make an enchilada, I mean a quesadilla, and you can dip it in there. You top it off. I mean, your favorite toppings, you know, that stuff goes really good with freshly diced onion and cilantro, a little squeeze of lime juice. And then your favorite picante sauce, whether it's red or green, because we're at Red and Green Confidential today.
Yeah, we are. And I want to take this opportunity to mention that everyone who does participate today, so everyone who chimed in on our social media in advance and everyone who calls with their favorite chili harvest season tradition or maybe a short recipe to share is registered for, if you're watching on Facebook, you can see the beautiful gift bag that matches my red shirt from the Chili Pepper Institute. And boy, does it smell like green chili in here. Edmundo, we've got some good stuff, huh?
Yes, Dr. Paul, you introduced the green chili candle a couple years ago, and let me tell you, it does smell like green chili.
Boy.
The best test we ever had is we lit one because I said, this may smell like old tennis shoes. Let's see what they smell like before we try to sell them. We lit one, and it was smelling, oh, this does smell like green chili, and it woofed out into the hallway. And people walking by, Kate, are you roasting green chilies in here? No, oh, it's a winner. It's a winner.
We also have some Fabian's Fuego hot sauce. How hot is it?
Not too hot. This is more like a Louisiana hot sauce level. It's we matched it up to more to be like a Louisiana hot sauce. Of course, we made our famous name on the Holy Jalokia hot sauce, which is maybe pretty hot.
Well, you say maybe pretty hot.
There's no baby about that.
Do you eat it, Paul?
One drop at a time. I made the mistake of, you know, doing the old hot sauce splash, and that I learned my lesson one time.
All right, so
we've got three of those prize packages. In addition, we also have a $20 gift certificate to the Santa Fe Grill. We're gonna have four drawings. So now is the time to get in your name at 575-646-2212. Casey, we're talking to somebody had a question about pick your own chili garden. And I looked and could not find one. I found one up in near Albuquerque, but not one in southern New Mexico. Dr. Boston, do you want to talk about the teaching garden?
Sure. Every year we plant the Chili Pepper Institute teaching garden at the Fabian Garcia Science Center. And that's at 113 West University Avenue. So if you'd like to go there, ask Syria to take you there. And it's open to the public. It's free. We have 150 different types of chilies planted. And each year we have a theme. And this year's theme is from A to Z. So we have chili peppers that associate from the letters A to Z. And this was for, we have a lot of school children come by. And so this is what we do is we give them a little sheet of paper from A to Z and say, see if you can find them. So it's like a little interactive activity for the kids. And they like that. And I'll also mention that if you come to the Chili Pepper Institute and 265 Gerald Thomas and say you heard the Red and Green Confidential, we'll give you a free packet of seed.
Were you able to find a chili that started with the letter X?
We do.
Really?
You can kind of cheat a little bit here. Extra hot. There's a chili out there that just has the X for extra. And so that's, and then actually there's a couple chilies out of Mexico that begin with X too. They use the you can probably help me out here, the X like a C or S sound.
Okay. Let's talk about chili and its origination. Is there an ancestor to the chili that produced the current chilies that we have today?
Oh, absolutely. New Mexico State University created what we call the New Mexican pod type. Fabian Garcia was the first horticulturist hired in the College of Ag in the late 1800s. And his job was to find new crops for the for farmers. And so he began to look at peach trees, cherry trees. He introduced pecan trees to the area. He looked at onions and introduced sweet onions. And then he also looked at chili peppers, and the only chili peppers that were being grown were in people's backyards, in their home gardens. So he took three types, the pasilla, chili negro, and the chili colorado, hybridized them together and began to select. And after about, six, 7 years, he released a variety called New Mexico Number 9, which is the very first New Mexican pod type ever released. And so that became very popular. We actually started a canning industry here for that, shipping them back by train to the Eastern Seaboard. And the fun story is that there was a cowboy here, and he had fallen in love with these green chilies, and he went out to California to be the sheriff of Oxnard. And so, but he grew some green chilies on the side. And after a couple of years, he says, I can make more money growing green chili than being the sheriff. So I'm quitting, but I got to find a bigger farm. So he went he was in Oxnard, which is kind of middle of California, went down Southern California to the town of Anaheim, started growing it. The people loved it. And that cowboy's name was Ortega, and he started the Ortega food industry. But because people had never seen the chili, it was created here at New Mexico State. They called it the Anaheim chili. So we always like to say Anaheim's a variety. New Mexican is the pod type.
Interesting story. I did not know that. At 1:20, we have a caller on the line for the Red or Green Confidential, 575-646-2212, to take part in today's program. Hi, Renee.
Hello. It's so funny you guys were just talking about Oxnard, because I'm a Ventura transplant, which is the next town over from Oxnard in California.
Sweet.
So I'm hoping somebody can actually help me figure out the green chili here in New Mexico. Because right now I'm a red girl. Because sometimes when I go to restaurants and I order something with a green sauce, it seems like it has a sour cream or something in it. Where in California, green sauce is just green sauce. Do a lot of restaurants like put sour cream or something into their sauces?
Juan, this is on you.
And so I haven't enjoyed a lot of the green sauces out here.
Well, you know, some, you know, different folks, you know, have their own recipes. You know, salsas is like rock and roll. Everybody has their own tune. Us at San Fe Grill, you know, we use a Fire Roasted Jalapeno that, you know, it's grown here in New Mexico. And then we use for our cream chile Alfredo sauce. It's a cream chile Alfredo sauce. This is for some of our specialty items. It is with the cream, but it's an authentic Alfredo sauce and made with a heavy cream, Parmesan cheese, Romano cheese. And then we saute some green chili in it, but that's a specialty item. But the majority of restaurants here, you know, they do make a fire roasted green chili or it just depends on where you go. You know, I know over at Cisneros, they make a really, really good green chili, and it's really hot, really hot. And they use like a chicken-based type of deal with like a cream of chicken in it. It's really flavorful, really creamy, really good. You know, El Sombrero,
maybe
they have a really good salsa.
Coming from.
El Sombrero has a really, really good salsa as well, but they use a fire roasted jalapeno. Mr. Hutchinson at La Posa, they use a jalapeno with a tomato base as well. But yeah, where I've seen the cream sauce, it's over there at Señor Sergio and his father and his brothers. They do a really good recipe. They do have the fire roasted jalapeno sauce. They have one with like a sour cream and jalapeno, and then they have that cream, that creamy one, which is really good, and then like a little bean dip with chorizo and chili in it as well.
Well, my problem is I don't like I do not care for sour cream or cream sauces. So a lot of times, mm-hmm. like I've been ordering chili rellenos, and I've been asking, it's like, do you guys put sour cream or anything in your green chili sauce? And they're like, no, no, no. And I take my chili relleno away, and it's like, no, this has got something in it. So I was
We make a really good salsa. We call it the snake bite, and it's with a fire roasted.
Oh no!
And that's
I love your guys' stuff.
Yes, that one, and then I have my mild, which is a tomato base,
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out when I go to a restaurant the right way to ask the question about how they do their green sauce without being one of those kind of people.
Well, your name is Renee, not Karen.
May I speak to the chef, please?
Oh, well, you know what? My mom's name is Karen, so I'll take it either way. It's all good.
Right up front.
My mom's name is Karen, too, Renee. And I'm sorry, Juan. Please repeat that, because we were talking over you a little bit there.
That's what girls do.
As for the chef, and he'll tell you exactly what's in it. You go to your favorite Santa Fe Grill, you'll see one of our guys out there. He'll give you an earful of information.
Oh, no, no. I go to you guys all the time. Trust me, I work for this figure. It didn't come overnight.
Well, personally, when I go there, I get
the brisket, bean, and green chili burrito. awesomeness.
That's one of my favorites right there. Now, you need to try this one out. I call it the bear. It's a brisket with a fire roasted green chili, our very own homemade wild hog barbecue sauce topped off with cheddar cheese. That's a big hit. That is, it's.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Right, I've had that.
Yes. And with the beans, it's really good, yeah, as well. You get double protein in there, and that's a beast of a burrito. Me and my wife share that. I can't eat those big burritos.
I can't eat the whole thing.
But my customers do.
Well, my son can. My son is always wanting me to take him to Santa Fe Grill because he's always wanting a breakfast burrito, and he wants the green chilies in it. So,
well,
you guys are all winners, yes, in my book. I'm just trying to figure out how to order correctly in a restaurant as opposed to just ordering and then I get something that I really, really, really don't like.
Yeah, so you're looking for a green chili.
Chachi makes a great salsa also.
Yeah, a green chili sauce without like a flour-based cream or sour cream in it.
Yeah, is that how I should ask? Do you guys do a flour-based? Is that how I should ask?
You know what? It's really si señores, because it's like a tourist type of restaurant. A lot of people, because they have one in up north, up in Farmington, they have one in Arizona, and so a lot of people, even me, when my family comes in from out of town from California, I either take them to La Posta or to Si Señores, just so they could try it out, because they've had my food, and you know, I like to support local, and you know, Mr. Hutchins is a dear friend of mine, said here over at Si Señores, we go and visit Gabriel and Luis Montoya at Chachi's, you know,
Chachi's,
you know, Red, I'm going to talk about Red right now. Sorry, but that's one of the hottest red chili sauces I've had, and I love it.
Well,
it's
Renee,
really, really good.
Good luck on your hunt for your perfect green sauce.
I'm just a California transplant trying to be a local New Mexican, and I am a chili pepper freak. So I'm cleaning out my freezer right now so I can make room for a new batch of green chilies.
Sounds good. All right. Well, thank you for calling today.
We'll break you in, Renee.
Huh?
I said thank you for calling today.
Okay. All right. You guys stay safe. Peace out.
Take care now. Bye. We do have a question about red chili, actually, that came up. So I wanted to get Rhonda's question in from Facebook here. Rhonda says, I left my Big Jim chilies on the plant too long, and now they are red. Are red chilies roasted and peeled the same as the green ones?
You want to do it one?
Ball.
Yes, you. What there's two stages of the red. One is the moist red when they roll over from the green to the red, and a lot of people will roast that. It's kind of like roasting pimentos or bell peppers, and it gives a very nice flavor to the dish after you roast them. The other way is you just let them go all the way until they're completely dry, like you see on a ristra. Then that's what you use later. It's a kind of a preservation method. So yes, the red is absolutely wonderful.
And Juan, what would you add to that?
Well, that's one of the chilies that I have on Chris Francois Harvest for me, the Autumn Blend, because I love that flavor when it's turning into that orange reddish color, and you know, it just has that awesome flavor, the color, the texture. You know, it's just, it has that. That beautiful look, you know, we call it the Autumn Blend. I use a lot of that chili. I'm up to about 6,000 pounds of that chili a month. That's what I'm producing right now. That's what for, you know, all my burrito fills and for all my burritos that I sell throughout the store.
That happens to be one of my favorites. I always look for it, the Autumn Roast. And if I can buy a few containers out of the freezer section, I'll do it. Juan, from your perspective, I wonder this a lot when I do go eat at different restaurants, and maybe they're, you know, if they have a hot green, it's always hot. It's consistently hot and good. How do you make sure that you're getting that chili, and with having to buy so much, how do you go about making sure you have what you need for the year?
Well, I order hot, but it's extra hot. It's just coming for the last couple of years. It's been flaming hot. And, you know, I talked to Chris about it. He says, Juan, you know what? You bite into a jalapeno, sometimes a bell pepper. You bite into one of these Big Jims, these Sandia Selects, and it's fire. You know, so it's kind of hit and miss. But, you know, it's, you know, sometimes, you know, you just happen to get some of those seeds from that field from the mild to the hot section. But it's been coming out, like, hotter than normal for the last couple of years. And, you know, and I was about to order mild, but, you know, Chris grows this for me because I buy so much. So I'm consistently using the hot autumn blend, the autumn roast.
Well, one person asked on Facebook, why is it that some people can eat and tolerate red chili but not green chili, or green with no consequences but not red? And I really hadn't heard that before necessarily. Dr. Boslin, is that something that maybe you've come across in the years of your study?
Absolutely. It's a very common trait or characteristic is not usually it's the green. People have a hard time eating green. They get an upset stomach. And that's really because the green fruit is immature. It's like eating a green apple, where the red has now matured, changed its chemical composition. And so it would be a better, on their stomachs, it seems. And so, yeah, that's a very common thing we've heard over the years is that I can't eat green, but I can eat and I say, well, try the red. And now, you know, everybody's different. Some people can get really hot. Some people has to have it mild. We're just all very different. But no, that's a very common characteristic.
I wonder if it has anything to do with, like, training for a marathon. I've trained for the hot chili, so I'm really good at it. But I couldn't go out and run a marathon tomorrow, that's for sure.
No, unfortunately, what it is when you eat chilies, we have what we call heat receptors in our mouth. The same thing says that you're drinking a hot cup of coffee to your brain. And so your brain's being tricked into thinking it's getting something hot with the chilies. Some people have a lot of receptors, so they're very sensitive. Some people don't have very many receptors, and they can eat very hot. But over time, your body does build up a tolerance. So when you first move to New Mexico, you might want mild. Then you'll be medium in a year, or you start off medium, and in a year you might be hot. So we do build up somewhat of a tolerance, but there's a very strong genetic component too.
Actually, that's what I experienced when I first moved to New Mexico in 2002. The chili just seemed too hot, and I complained to my wife and said, you know, I want to taste the food. I don't want to taste just the chili. And then over the years, I prefer hotter and hotter. And, you know, it really does prove to be true. Paul, let's talk about the marketing efforts that have been taken through the Chili Pepper Institute and, of course, New Mexico State University to get chili, green chili in particular, across the United States. I remember we spoke about 15 years ago, you and I, at a meeting and talked about those efforts to get chili. Where are we today with getting chili out to the different parts of the country?
Well, I think the New Mexico Department of Agriculture did a really good job because one of the things we had learned was people didn't know what to do with a green chili. What do I do with this pepper? And so they went out and actually did demonstrations along the eastern seaboard, down the south, roasting and having people taste it and see how to use it and putting out recipe booklets. The interesting thing was a 40-pound sack is what we buy. We roast it and we freeze it. Back east, nobody needed that many, so they had to learn to sell by the pound, and usually 5 pounds was all they could put, because all they had was a small little freezer on the refrigerator. They didn't have a great big old freezer like we have where we stack it up for the year, and so that was a real learning curve there, is that nobody wants 40-pound sacks, so we're going to have to sell it as a smaller unit.
You know, a couple of weeks ago, I got a text from an old friend of mine in Houston saying that he had just come back from the supermarket and bought green chili. And he said it was Hatch green chili. And he came to visit many years ago, and I took him around the Mesilla Valley and took him up to Hatch to see the town of Hatch. It was in chili season at the time. But he got so excited that he bought some green chili. But he texted me saying, what do I do with it? And so I had to explain to him how he needed to roast it. And of course, in doing the show, I immediately asked him, what kind of chili is it? Is it Big Jim? Is it, you know, what kind of chili is it? And he replied back saying, I'm in a suburb of Houston, Texas, in a supermarket. I did not ask what kind of chili it was. Chili is chili. Do you get that from people that can't distinguish the difference or don't bother to ask the differences in the types of chilies that are out there?
Yeah, I always use the wine analogy. If you first start drinking wine, what you notice is alcohol. The next thing you might say is I can tell red wines from white wines. And then pretty soon you can tell different kind of varieties of red wines, varieties of white wine. And the same thing with chilies. The first time people eat it, it's heat, just heat. You can throw anything in there. And then pretty soon they'll notice that, well, that one batch I like better than the other batch. And then I'll say, well, go ask the produce person or the roadside stand, what variety, what cultivar did you buy? And that way you start to associate the name. It's really what we've been trying to do is get people to realize that there is a lot of variety in the heat profiles, in the flavors. And once you ask by cultivar, you learn that. Like Juan was saying, you know, our Sandia Select is what he likes. And that is a little kind of a different heat than the Big Jim and the 6-4. And so, you know, those subtle things that when you become a chili connoisseur, you notice.
This week, Las Cruces lost an icon, Roberto Estrada, who got into the Guinness Book of World Records, making the world's largest enchilada for Las Cruces. Year after year, for decades, he served the community to help put Las Cruces on the map. And a lot of people are sharing their thoughts, their memories of Roberto. And Edmundo, I'd actually like to start with you in terms of your history with Roberto and what thoughts you have.
You know, back in 2002, when I first moved to New Mexico, I asked my old boss at another radio station I worked at where to get some good burritos. And he said, Roberto's, without any doubt. He said, go to Roberto's and he'll take care of you. And over the years, I got to know Roberto because we did a promotion at the radio station where we had Jammy Jam Fridays. And Roberto, for no reason, just would donate 50 burritos each Friday morning for our listeners to come by and just pick up a burrito. And, you know, we did that for 7 years. But, you know, one of my fondest memories is when my youngest daughter, who's now 10, when she was about 2, she was obsessed with putting ketchup on everything. And it was a Saturday morning. I took her to the farmer's market and I said, let's go get a burrito from Roberto's. And when she got there, she ordered a bean and cheese burrito. And she said, where's the ketchup? And I said, well, I doubt that they have ketchup. So I asked the people at the front, do you have ketchup? And they're like, we don't have ketchup. We have salsa. And, you know, some Mr. Roberto was standing nearby and he disappeared and went out the back and he came back out with a little package of ketchup and said, here you go. I know she likes ketchup on her burrito. And there you go. So he was always willing to serve the customer and to make sure that the customer was happy.
And Yoli Diaz, Director of CARE, Cancer Aid Resource and Education, had a special bond with Roberto dating back to the 80s. And Edmundo spoke with Yoli about the impact he had in the community.
Yoli, how did you come about working with Roberto Estrada?
Well, let me first say that I knew Roberto from the 1980s, and it was really from a job that I had at that time, and that's when I knew of his giving. But when I got more involved with him was when we started CARE. And what started it is when we were having board meetings, he would allow us to meet there at his restaurant. He actually even served us. Mm-hmm. So that's where the more of the knowing of him and friendship got started.
Do you have any stories as to, you know, personal stories about Roberto and what you saw behind the scenes at his restaurant and in the community?
Yes. So, you know, when we would go to the restaurant, there were so many people that knew him. He even had these morning meetings, but people always, you know, wanted to be able to say hello to him. And I even got to see when people had gone over there, and they did have, you know, an ask of him. So I got to personally see that too. And I know that even people that we knew that he helped, just his demeanor, you know, if you told him that somebody needed something and he listened, and when he says, okay, what do you need? He took out just, you know, a little bag and he wrote it on the bag. And he put it down, you know, and then even though you may say one thing, he would say, okay, this is what I'm going to give you, and which would be more than mm-hmm. what you even asked. And, you know, seeing that in him, I mean, I myself never really understood, because you heard other people, you know, people knew to, you know, ask him. And for me, you know, he was such a humble man because it can't be, it has to be challenging to, you know, be able to do as much as he did. And, you know, in return, I hope that he was just blessed that his, you know, his business went on, that he could give so much. So when we started our event after the whole enchilada voted to end their board and we were going to start ours, you know, at that point we had talked to him and told him that we wanted him involved. So, you know, one of the things that we wanted to do is honor him because we knew how many years he was involved in that. And to have that kind of longevity is a rare, rare jewel. You know, one thing that I do want to do is something where he has a public honor that is a permanent public honor. And that is something that I want to be able to work on because the longevity he had in our community of helping people, it's a very positive story to be told.
Thank you, Jolie.
Okay. Have a good day.
It's the Red or Green Confidential on KRWG Public Media. Edmundo Resendez is here, Dr. Paul Bosland, and Juan Morales of the Santa Fe Grill. Juan, what would you like to add, remembering Roberto Estrada?
Well, Roberto, great person, heart of gold, heart of gold. Back in the early 2000s, I used to coach girls U-10 softball, and one of his granddaughters was on our team. And, like, you know, he would show up, he would send his kids, and they would, you know, even though, you know, it was Santa Fe Grill coaching, he would still donate food, not just to us, but to when we had tournaments, to the officials out there, to the volunteers, to the board members of Escusa Sparks and Rick. That man had a heart of gold and very, very well liked in the community. And you know what? I'm a big fan of his green chili meat. And he uses the same chili that I use and his red chili meat as well. But he uses beef in his red chili meat. And the gorditas are phenomenal. His salsa is really, really good. And, of course, he sells a lot of tamales year-round, not just during the holidays. So, you know, that's a go-to place right there. Masa, you better start ordering that masa in October, November because, you know, the line's out the door.
And
it's down.
And Edmundo also spoke with Las Cruces Sun News trending reporter Leah Romero about some of the memories people are sharing for an article that she's working on.
Leah, you are currently working on an article about Roberto Estrada where you have asked people to share their stories with you so that you can show the community what Roberto did for Las Cruces and the surrounding area.
Yes, I am. I know that many people have been impacted throughout the years by Roberto Estrada's kind heart and his willing to give in so many instances. So I thought it would be a great idea to reach out and see what people would be willing to share. And I've collected a couple of stories at this point.
What are people saying?
So a lot of people have similar stories of Roberto willing to donate his time for different organizations throughout the town, his money, his food, and many times his food for free. I know that the CARE organization and their La Gran Fiesta, he was very involved with that, and he donated his food, his time. Others have similar stories with children, children's sports teams. He was helping with fundraisers, with schools, Doñana Community College, even. And then others have stories of where he stepped up and offered food for funerals, family members, some people he didn't even know. He would come and donate his food and, you know, in his own way, help the grieving family.
How can people share their stories with you for your article?
So people can reach out to me via email at lromero@lcsun-news.com. You can also give me a call at my work number at 575-418-3442.
Yeah, thank you very much for working on this article.
Thank you.
All right, at 1:44, let's get back to some more chili questions that have been coming in from our Facebook page. We want to try to answer everyone's questions and work in everyone's comments along the way. And everyone who does participate is registered for one of three gift bags from the Chili Pepper Institute here at NMSU. And this next question might be one we might have to save for the Fall Gardening Confidential with Jeff Anderson. But Paul, you might be able to answer this question from Malcolm, who asks, how much should I water my chili plants? Any advice?
Ooh, that's probably the toughest question to answer, because you can easily overwater chilies. I always say chilies don't like their feet wet, but you have to give them enough moisture so you don't get what we call blossom end rot. It's a little browning on the tips. So it really depends on soil. Sandy soil here, you could water every day. Heavy clay soil, probably once every 7 days, maybe 10 days. And so depending on the soil, if you bought a soil mix at the Home Depot or Lowe's and was potting up your plants, you probably could get away with maybe every 5 days, give them a good drink. And also you want to make sure you use what we would consider flower fertilizer, something that's high in the phosphorus. That middle number should be higher than the first number. Otherwise the plants will be really big, green and lush, but they won't set fruit. So you need that phosphorus to have them set fruit.
All right. Well, thank you for that. And Michelle chimed in to say that Roberto was a Las Cruces icon, the most giving person you could have ever met, and asks, will chili be a less hot this year due to the rains?
Oh, that's another tough one. It depends on where it comes from. Our studies have shown that, yeah, if you stress chilies and they don't get water, they'll get hotter. If you give them too much water, they get hotter. They keep the lowest heat when you give them everything optimum. And the other thing we found is that where you pick the fruit off the plant, the bottom fruit is hotter than the fruit higher up. So even where you pick the fruit can have an effect on the heat level. So there is that variation. And, I used to joke, and I made this up, that I said in New Mexico, we have a tradition when you make chili rellenos, I take a bite, you take a bite, and if mine's too hot and yours is too mild, we'll trade. But, you know, that's all you can do, I think.
Well, why don't we stay on the topic of chile rellenos? I know it's something that we did spend a little bit of time on last year. But, Juan, you mentioned chile rellenos before we actually went on the air this afternoon. And you talked about easy peel chilies. And I think, you know, that's one of the challenges that I know myself and anyone who hasn't really mastered it runs into, is getting a chili, a medium enough chili, then roasting it just right and peeling it just right so that it stays all in one piece. Give us the secret.
Well, there's a trick that I've learned that I've used, my father used to incorporate, my grandfather. So when they would get their roaster, roast a chili, and then what they would do, they would like put it in a bin, and they would get the water hose with cool water, and then just like spray it to cool it off, to cool them off, and then they would dump them in a big bucket with ice water in there. That keeps the pepper nice and green and meaty. Some people go and they put it in plastic sacks, and then they take it home. By then, it overcooks and it gets really wilted and soft, and it turns darker green. So if you want that beautiful, crisp color, I recommend cold water right after you roast it. And then you could – a lot of people like to cool it off, bag it, freeze it right away with the skin on. But if you, like, get the water hose and then just, like, you know, hose it down just very mildly, that's – skin falls right off as well. As far as flavors, I think the flavors are the same, because my mother likes it with the skin on, my father without. So I would just bag whatever was on the table. And, you know, the thing is that, you know, that's what the reason they cooled, they wet it down so it could, you know, stay green. So if you go and get your chili roasted, take a cooler, put some ice water in there, and then dump it in there, you'll have a nice, beautiful green pepper. Because if you put it in a plastic sack, in a plastic bag, and then in a box, by the time you get home, it's going to be really wilted, dark, dark green. The flavor will be there, but they shrink also. So that's a key. To make a good chile relleno, you want to cool them off as quick as you can.
And so invest in your own chili roaster is what I'm hearing.
Well, not necessarily. Just take your cooler to your favorite chili roaster. New Hunt Farms does a great job right here. The guys in Mesilla, La Risa Man in Mesilla, And, you know, I was roasting chili there for some time, but I just didn't have time to man the grill and be out there with a roaster.
For sure.
And, you know, you could also get that easy peel from, you know, say from grocery stores. I'm talking like about restaurant grocery stores, like Shamrock Food Stores right there. They have them in 5-pound bags. And what you do with those, you just put them in your sink, let cold water run on them, and it's easy peel. The skin just falls right off, and you can make a great chile relleno. They also have the stem. They have some with stems, some without the stems.
All right. Well, thanks for the hot tip. Laura writes, I knew Hatch chili was becoming popular outside of New Mexico when the local Bristol Farms, a gourmet-type market store in South Pasadena, started selling them and roasting them out in front of their parking lot. This started about 6 years ago. And speaking of Hatch, this Labor Day weekend, I believe, is the time that they'll be back at it for their Hatch Chili Festival. And moving downtown, too. So that's going to be a lot of fun for everyone that goes to Hatch. And Sparky's in Hatch has grown to be a major roadside attraction known for their award-winning, world-famous green chili cheeseburger. And what's the secret to that burger? Edmundo spoke with Tico Nunn, the owner of Sparky's, to see if he could get him to reveal his secret.
Hey, good morning. This is Tico Nunn from Sparky's in Hatch, New Mexico, green chili capital of the world.
Tico, what does it take to make your green chili cheeseburger, which, by the way, is award-winning?
Well, Edmundo, it's pretty simple. It's just we use 80-20 Black Angus USDA choice meat, just under a half a pound, with our own private seasoning that my pop has been making for over 50 years, hot Hatch green chili, and a slice of American cheese, and that's it.
And are people surprised that that's all that goes into it?
They're not surprised, I would say, so much as pleased. It's so simple, it lets all the ingredients talk out real loud. And so I've had people my age, and I'm in my 70s, walk up to me and say, this is the best cheeseburger I've ever had. So, yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe they are surprised.
What's the crop of chili looking for you at Sparky's?
Hatch is doing just fine. All the farmers, they plant it and they rotate it. So if a field has a little bit too much rain water, they drain it and they skip to the next field, and then they backtrack and pick the one that was wet a little bit later than what they thought. So it's all rolling off really nice, and it's fresh, and it's tasty.
Tico, I want to thank you very much for always supporting KRWG and for doing your part for the community.
I love KRWG, and it's our pleasure. Thank you for calling, Edmundo.
Thank you, Tico.
Bye.
Maybe, Juan, you might have something to add about putting together a great burger.
Well, guess what? We also make a fabulous green chili bacon cheeseburger in Hatch. But let me tell you my trick. I also use a certified Angus beef, and I use lettuce, tomato, pickles, onions on a sesame seed bun with bacon and fire roasted green chili right there. So I like my veggies in my burger. I just don't like the meat and the cheese. I'm the type of guy who likes the crisp. I like the sesame seeds. And you know what? We sell a ton of those. And, you know, we go and trade. You think we trade burgers. We trade barbecue. We trade our brisket for brisket. You know, we get tired of our own product. So, you know, we go in there and shop at each other's restaurants. So we do make a really great green chili cheeseburger. And, you know, that stir-fried Angus beef goes a long ways, especially like he said, the 80-20, because you have that right consistency of fat with that protein, and you need to have a little bit of fat. And then I put more fat because I love bacon in my burgers. So, I like mustard. People like ketchup. People like mayo. I just do the mustard.
All right. Well, thank you, Juan. And it's just about 1:54, so just a few minutes left. Edmundo, what else do we need to try to pack into this final few minutes of the Red or Green Confidential? Edmundo, you're muted.
You know, you would think after almost 2 years, I would have figured that out by now. But, you know, there you have it.
I could see you talking, so I knew.
Yes, yes. Very passionately, actually. Sandy wanted to know, Ball, about seeds. And this is something you and I have discussed many years ago. Are the seeds hotter than the chili itself?
seeds have absolutely no heat, and that's kind of a myth. The seeds are closely are formed on what we call the placenta, or that crosswall. The crosswall is the only part of the chili that's hot. The seeds seem to be hot because the oils that have the capsaicinoids along the veins splash onto the seed, but the seeds absolutely produce no heat at all. So if you want to make them milder, you got to get rid of the vein. And if you look at a chili inside there, you'll see it's a yellow coloring on the vein. The more yellow, the hotter it's going to be. I'm asked a lot of times, how can I tell if a chili's hot or not? You can't from the outside. You got to cut them open and see how much yellow is on the inside.
Dr. Boslin, if there's anything that I've argued with people more than, you know, maybe politics about, it's where the heat of a chili comes from. And people don't believe me when I tell them that it's not from the seeds, and they... how do I point them in the right direction?
Well, we say it's the plant breeder's trick. What you do is you get a jalapeno, cut a piece of the wall off and eat it, then cut a piece of the vein off with the wall and give it to your person that's challenging you, and they'll think you're the most macho person in the world, and then you can explain what you just did to them.
All right. Thank you for the tip.
Paul, you know, we talk about this every year, and when it comes to making salsa, I've switched from jalapenos because of their inconsistency in heat at different supermarkets to serranos, which are consistent in heat. Why is that?
Because when I first started, the produce industry thought jalapenos were an exotic pepper, but they wanted to start carrying them. But back east, they wanted very mild ones. So us plant breeders began to make very mild jalapenos. People started eating them, said, you know, I like them, but now I want them a little hotter. And so we saw that transition. And so all you can do is if the produce manager will let you cut one open, see what they look like, and say, okay, I'll buy them. Or stop by the, you know, the roadside stands around here, and they'll be able to tell you how hot they are. But that reminds me of a thing. We just released a new Serrano called New Mex Lata Lutein. It's got more lutein than any other pepper, and lutein is very good for your eyes. And so what we're hoping is that the salsa industry will begin to use this high lutein serrano, it's bright yellow, in salsas to give people a more nutritious salsa. And hopefully you can find it around the roadside stands in this area, because the seed's now been out about 1 year.
Cool.
And what inspired you to add the lutein?
Oh, I mean, when you're a plant breeder, you have to think 10 years down the road. What are we going to do? And if you notice, a lot of people are talking about making more nutritious fruits and vegetables, trying to get more flavorful fruits and vegetables so children will eat them. And so we were looking at the chemical composition of chilies, and we noticed that some of them had lutein. And so we went back and said, well, can we fortify it, make it more lutein available? And so we were able to do that.
All right. And just a couple of minutes to go. So we're going to be doing some drawings here at the end of the show, and we will be contacting each of our winners of this gift bag from the Chili Pepper Institute at NMSU. But Bo chimed in to say the green chili meat burrito from Santa Fe Grill is one of the best. Chili is spicy and very tasty. And Lourdes, who said during her NMSU years, she interviewed Mr. Roberto for a project, and he was such an easy person to talk to and down to earth, a gentleman. So thank you, everyone, for your comments and questions today. Edmundo?
You know, just to add one final story about Roberto that I can share. Many years ago, I started an advertising agency, and I had no clients, none. I mean, just started with zero. And I approached Roberto and told him about my dream and what I was doing. And I asked him if he needed any design work done that I could do. And he said, yes, you can do some design work for me. And, you know, he didn't have to do it, but he saw that I was eager and wanting to start a business. And I think he came from his own perspective of being a business owner, that he was kind enough to help get my foot off the ground. And he was my first dollar that I made with that business. And again, just a very generous man.
Well, Edmundo, thank you for coming back to Voice of the Public for the Red or Green Confidential. Hopefully we'll see you around again soon.
Yes, tamales, December.
Sounds good. Dr. Paul Boslin, thank you very much for joining us again and for sharing all of your knowledge.
My pleasure. Anytime.
And Juan Morales of the Santa Fe Grill, burning the candle at both ends. Thank you so much for always being a part of the Red or Green Confidential.
I love hanging out with you guys, talking with Paul, Casey, and Mundo. You know, lots of great stories. You know, this is our sixth year, and, you know, I want to go for the seventh and, you know, introduce some new recipes. And I'm eager to try out that new Serrano pepper. I live out here in the country. I live over here towards Doñana, so I'm going to look for it at Luján Farm.
You can definitely see me wearing my readers, which I can't read anything without them anymore. So I will be searching out that Serrano, and I'll let you know if it helps along those lines. At least slow down the regression anyway.
That's right. That's all you can hope for sometimes.
All right. Well, Leora Zeitlin is next on KRWG with Intermezzo by Request. Thank you for joining us for the Red or Green Confidential. And remember,
it's the most wonderful time of the year.
I'll see you back here at 4 o'clock for All Things Considered. And if you're just tuning in and missed most of the show, you'll be able to find it just a little bit later this afternoon at krwg.org. Click on Local Radio and Voice of the Public.